He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Curry, way downtown, bang, bang!
You don't like that? You don't like NBA basketball?
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of the General Manager's Office. And my name is Liam Ellison. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jared Gunn. Jared, how are you tonight?
Going absolutely fantastic, Liam. And it's good to be back here. But unfortunately, it's our last show for the season.
It is. Last time you'll hear those idiots who believe in analytics for at least a few months. We think we'll be back around draft time.
Yeah, around draft time. We'll have plenty of big reports coming out. We want to be ahead of the eight ball, as per se. So, yeah, definitely, I think there's going to be a big off-season for the GM's office.
Absolutely, and I'm sure we'll see some draft night trades, hopefully, to talk about. Might have to do a bit of an emergency pod as soon as it finishes, I reckon.
Yeah, we'll be onto it.
Absolutely. Let's start off today with none other than Russell Westbrook. It's hard to go past that unbelievable performance the other day. 20, 20, and 20. It's a really historical line. I mean, Wilt Chamberlain, the only other player to do it in NBA history, I believe.
And this would be, I reckon, a whole lot harder to do it today compared to when Wilt Chamberlain did it 51 years ago. Mm. And I was having a talk to someone about this yesterday, and I was saying, who else in the league could do what Russell Westbrook just did yesterday? I don't think anyone else could put up a stat line like he just did.
Yeah, I certainly can't think of anyone else off the top of my head. I mean, it's ridiculous the versatility you would need to record both 20 assists as a playmaker while pulling down 20 boards at the same time.
Exactly.
I feel like I kind of took this line for granted a bit, because it is Russell Westbrook and these huge numbers are kind of numb to me at this point. But you really have to step back and, like, it is absurd what he did. It really is.
I think first about the work rate that he would have had to put in, because, you know, it's a two-way game basketball, so he's running up and down and he's getting rebounds and then he's facilitating. He's almost involved in every single play of that game.
Mm.
Also, like, to OKC, the efficiency of some of their shooters would have had to been amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, his shooting hasn't been fantastic as of recent, Russell Westbrook. And I know Paul George has been struggling a tad coming back from that shoulder injury, and they have dropped off a bit. I think in that eighth seed, which is a bit worrying for them. But obviously, Russ is battling away as per usual, an absolute warrior, really.
Yeah, he's getting into playoff mode at the moment, Russ. And yeah, it's good to see. It's good to see a bit of love for Russ. I feel like he cops a little bit of flack when it's really unnecessary. He puts up triple-doubles and people think he's stat padding, but, like, he's an incredible player.
Yeah, certainly there's a lot of talk around that stat padding thing, and I think it's a bit of a pushback to just how popular he was a couple of years ago. People like to, you know, hate on popular things, don't they? So it's a bit of that, I reckon.
It's easy to jump on.
Yeah, exactly. How about Devin Booker? He's going to sit the last three games. This is certainly a blow. I mean, we know some fantasy owners will be done. I mean, a lot of fantasy leagues ended last year avoiding the dreaded last week of play where a lot of injuries are happening. And here we are. I mean, I know in your league, Jared, where you are in the grand final with, of course, Stephen Rakes, our guest from last week, you're still going. So Devin Booker sitting the last three games is quite a blow.
Yeah, luckily either. Both of us don't even have Devin Booker at the moment, so it's not too much of a worry for us. But Devin Booker was putting up absolutely massive numbers over the last week or two, and it's going to be a blow for people that are still playing, no doubt. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, obviously a really popular DFS play as well over the last fortnight as people have been riding out these massive, massive performances. But let's actually talk about your fantasy grand final. I mean, I do understand that you haven't completely avoided the injury bug, have you?
Nah, it's been a really tough week for myself. So I was around that 180 to 200 point lead up for probably the first week or so.
And in a points league?
In our points league. And just over the last week, I've had Joel Embiid, who's been rested over the last three games because Philly's on a road trip. And then Blake's been out as well with a bit of knee soreness, which is, to me, it's all rest. They're trying to get these players right for the playoffs, and it's absolutely killing me. I've lost probably, 100 to 200 points from those two guys if they're playing really good basketball. And, it's been absolutely crap. Like, it's probably not fair to say that I'm copying it myself. Rakesy's had Zach LaVine out, and also John Collins has been out for a couple games too. So it's coming on both sides, but these are probably two of the best, three or four players on my roster.
Yeah, I think it's also the risk you take when you draft Embiid and Griffin, more so probably Embiid. But I think when you get a guy like Embiid in your roster at the start of the year, you have to kind of expect a few missed games around this time of year, I reckon.
Yeah, I think so, especially because they're in a pretty good position this season, Philly, so they want to make sure he's right for all the playoff games. So, look, I didn't think it was going to be this bad. he's been, honestly, Joel has been pretty good for most of the season. He's probably missed maybe 10% of games, which hasn't been too bad. But and he's gotten me into the position I am today. He's been my best player, hands down, by an absolute mile. But it doesn't matter when you're in this last week or two. It really doesn't when, you know, you're missing out on these points.
He's had an absolute breakout year, really. I mean, obviously, he's been a great centre, for a couple of years now. But he's sort of taken it now to that point where he's playing, you know, 68 to 70 games or whatever and putting up huge, like 27 and 13. Statistically, at least, it's been a breakout year, I think. I'm interested to know, though, who do you think is the All-NBA first-team centre this year, Jared?
I think I'd pick Embiid just because I've seen how consistent his numbers have been all season. He's a better scorer than Jokic as well. And Jokic is so versatile across all three stat lines, the main stat lines, I should say. So, it's going to be tight, but I'd still back an Embiid to win that position over.
It's really close. I'm very much flip-flopping between the two. I think Jokic obviously has led Denver to a top two seed in the West, I believe. So that's hugely impressive. But at the same time, I mean, you could almost argue that outside of Golden State in the West, it's actually really open. So it's not this is kind of irrelevant when it comes to this kind of first All-NBA stuff. But perhaps the top four seeds in the West, it's not as difficult as it once was just because it's so even. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I suppose so. We're seeing it maybe more so in the Eastern Conference, you know, that it's only going to take a couple of wins to get into the top four. It's the same with the Western Conference. It really is. You are right when you say that.
I think the East is actually tougher now at the top. It obviously, the depth drops off quite a bit in the bottom five, but those top four seeds, I mean, Milwaukee's are probably the second best team in the NBA. Maybe Houston is, but I think Milwaukee probably is.
It's funny because I feel like any team right now, there's probably three or four games, and if a team wins all four of those games and another team, you know, loses all four of those games, whatever it is, there's going to be a real shift in the standings before the season ends.
Yeah. The other thing is, you'd think at this time of year, the top teams are probably going to close out the season with nothing but wins unless they play each other, because if they come across anyone in the bottom half, they will have no intention of really winning the game. There's going to be guys rested, etc.
Do you think it really matters for some of these teams, though, where they finish necessarily? Because I feel like teams like Milwaukee and, I don't know, I can't say another team just off the top of my head, can't say it, but are they more worried about getting home court than who they face?
I suppose. I mean, the Bucks have pretty much got it wrapped up. I think they're at least two or three games ahead of the Raptors. So, they could get overtaken, but I think they're effectively safe there. What they could sort of worry about is actually getting home court advantage over the Warriors, which I can see now they're actually 5 wins ahead of Golden State. So, I think they'd be right, Milwaukee. And that is actually a huge advantage, because although Golden State, I think they're next to unbeatable if they stay healthy, you know, Milwaukee would want to give themselves every chance. Home court could be a bit of a difference, potentially.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's matchups there that they look and see. They probably wouldn't like to verse maybe a team like the Nets, because the Nets can get on a huge run. But yeah, I think either way, get home court advantage. Worry about that later.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Who's your pick for the East?
That's hard. That's really hard.
It is hard.
It is hard. I'm flipping between either the Bucks or the 76ers. I think Philly could, you know, provide a bit of. Bit of a surprise, I think, with that stardom that they've got with Jimmy Butler and Tobias and obviously Joel and Ben. Either way, I'm actually really excited for the Eastern Conference playoffs, just because I think it's really unpredictable. Compared to the West, it's very highly likely that the Warriors come out and win. But the East, that's a guess. It could be anyone. I'd probably change my mind tomorrow.
It's going to be awesome. I mean, we think that those top four seeds will go through. The Pacers have now dropped to the 5 seed. I actually like the Raptors to win it. I think Kawhi is going to sort of go to another level. He's been resting games throughout the regular season, but I think playoff time, we're going to see a ridiculous version of Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, and they're stacked at the moment, the Raptors as well. They've got some really good guard depth, and also bringing in Marc Gasol is going to provide a lot of playoff experience. I think it's huge.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could say there's a little bit of a lack of continuity, but Milwaukee have had a few injuries. I mean, you know, Brogdon will be out for a while, so there's a few things going on there. Philly, they've got the talent, certainly. I think they're a big chance, but they haven't quite put it together this year, so it'll be interesting to see whether they can do it in the playoffs.
They have to go all in, because I think it's highly unlikely that they keep everyone next season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd like to see, obviously, Ben Simmons get into a finals would be great as an Australian, but it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the Los Angeles Lakers now, certainly going out of the playoff race. I mean, not many of their normal rotation has been playing basketball as of recent, and Josh Hart has recently joined that contingent of players who are out at the moment. I mean, he underwent a procedure on his right knee, so I think he's going to miss about 12 weeks, will Josh Hart. So a couple of guys have been good in the absence of those guards there. I mean, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Jared, 19.8 points and 4.5 rebounds over the last six games.
Yeah, he's been handy. I've picked him up for the waiver wire for a couple of days, and I think the Lakers have got a back-to-back coming up, so it's actually proven to be a good decision so far for me. Hopefully he can keep those numbers up. I actually want to go back on Josh Hart quickly, because Josh Hart was a guy that came out of the Summer League last year and had a really, really good tournament, and he's come out this year only averages 7.8 points with a 40% shooting percentage as well, which has been a bit disappointing. Have you think he's been a big disappointment this season?
Yeah, he started off the year with a whole lot of promise. I mean, obviously, coming off that Summer League, and then he was playing some good basketball early on, and I had a bit of a fly on him on the waiver wire. He was probably giving me about, at that point, I'd say about 14 points per game off the bench, but the fact that it's petered off into such a low points per game at really poor percentages, that is disappointing. That's actually news to me. I wasn't aware that his numbers were that bad.
Yeah, it was a big surprise. He was the one that I thought going to be a bit of a flyer this year. I thought that could be a bit of a surprise at the Lakers bench. I don't think it helps when that team's not playing fantastic either. It shouldn't be too much of a surprise, I don't think.
Possibly a little bit of a dint to his trade value to the Pelicans, although we're sort of starting to hear that trade is pretty much no chance of happening by the sounds of the Pelicans. They're very much in petty mode.
I think I'm just as excited as I am for the playoffs as I am for free agency to come up, Liam, because it's going to be exciting to see some of these acquisitions that happen in trades. And
as a
draft.
Clippers fan as well.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what's going to happen, Liam. There's been reports about Kawhi reportedly maybe interested in staying in Toronto, which is interesting. And KD is also another one that's been brought up in articles too. So, look, if we get anyone, I'm going to be happy. But it's going to be
exciting. When you say anyone, would you be like, is that Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins happy? Kemba Walker happy?
I'd be disappointed if we don't get KD or Kawhi, but I think that they're not going to recruit anyone that they don't think is going to play a good role on our roster. I trust our front office to make good decisions. That's all they've done ever since the GM has been changed over. So I'm pretty confident something good can happen.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think Butler looks like he's going to be chasing that check for Mainz. So I can't see the Clippers offering him $190 million. I don't think that would be too responsible, would it?
No, I wouldn't prefer us to do that whatsoever. I'd actually rather maybe wait another year and see who's out of contract the year after.
Bit of delay of gratification. I mean, you might get a couple of good years out of Butler, some great years even, but, you know, in year 4 and 5, you wouldn't like it, would you?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Well, how about Mitchell Robinson, a guy that we love on the GM's office? He's another of our favourites. I mean, obviously, Enes Kanter and a couple of guys. We'll have to invest in some jerseys for the studio, I reckon, Jared, but he looks really good. I mean, he's set to start for the rest of the season. They're going to really give him the reins, it looks like, for the last couple of games.
Yeah, ever since he's gotten in that starting lineup, he's been putting up 30 minutes a night. So that's really good to see, because we've known that Mitchell Robinson's playing time's been all over the place this season. But in a points league, in our point league, he's been putting up over 20 every single game with a couple 30-plus games. But just his stats, having a look at it right now, over the last couple of games, he's putting up really, really good rebounding numbers. He had 19 and 21 the other day against Toronto, which is fantastic.
Wow. Yeah, and his blocking numbers, we know all about them and how impressive he is blocking the ball. He's continued that at a really high rate. I mean, you know what? He's only actually averaged 3 blocks per game in the month of March, which is ridiculous for me to say only, but I'm used to him almost getting up to that 4 blocks per game range.
He makes the most of his playing time. So when he was playing only 15 to 16 minutes, for him to put up that many blocks is amazing. Maybe it's because he's playing more minutes and it's tiring him out a little bit more. So the intensity of the game is pretty full on in basketball. But also his steal numbers have been pretty good too. He's put up a couple games with 3 steals, so that's not too bad either.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually scoring the ball in double digits the last couple of weeks, which is important because that's what he's been lacking. If he adds that, then he's a really, really strong fantasy option.
Yeah, I think next season it's going to be, we've said this before, but next season it's going to be interesting to see what New York do with this roster. If DeAndre's there, I don't know what's going to happen with Mitchell Robinson's role, but you feel like if he's a starting center next season, then he's almost a top two pick, first or second round pick.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't go a first on him. A second I could maybe be convinced. Certainly a third rounder I think he'd be worth. But it depends on where what his role is. I mean, if he stays in that New York team and both of those guys are there, that's probably a bit of uncertainty. But if I was Mitchell Robinson, I'd really want to be forcing my way. I mean, forcing, I'm not sure, but you'd want to be in a situation, at least in the next couple of years, where you're a starting five on a team, because he's that good.
Yeah, it's proving tricky for New York, I reckon, because obviously DeAndre Jordan plays a part in trying to recruit Kevin Durant down, and you'd almost still back DeAndre Jordan to do a better job than Mitchell Robinson just because of the history he does have in the league. But fantasy-wise, for Mitchell Robinson, you'd be hoping that somehow DeAndre gets off this roster.
Yeah. Let's talk about another team with some rotation uncertainties, it could be said. The Chicago Bulls, they're putting out some interesting lineups as of recent. Robin Lopez, the lone starter, remaining in their starting five. And how's this for a name? I think we retweeted a nice tweet on our Twitter on the GM's office about him the other day. Walt Lemon Jr. How good is that?
Is that a 2K generated name, Liam? It's almost like a guy you're making in career mode, but you don't really change the name or the appearance. That's what it really sounds like to me.
Jesse Penfold on Twitter, he's the person we retweeted, he said, could have been playing for the Flint Tropics alongside Jackie Moon, BB Ellison, Scootsie Doubleday. In fact, last week he probably was. That is a fantastic.
I know you're not a movie man, but do you like Semi-Pro?
I've never watched it.
No, doesn't surprise me.
It's all right.
It's all right. But yeah, Walt Lemon Jr. has probably been an absolutely superb guy to get off the waiver wire.
I mean, he's played, I think, a couple of games now, so really, you know, new to this stint. But he did put up 24 points and 8 assists today. So really, really strong stuff from Walt Lemon Jr. And you'd think he'd be a good streaming option. And also on the back of that, I think he's a really good DFS player, someone you definitely want to have in a few of your lineups.
Yeah, I was about to say that for DFS, that he's probably going to be pretty cheap. I don't know if it goes up after this right now, Liam, but his price. But yeah, if he did happen today, which I don't think many people would have, you would have been pretty happy.
Yeah, I think you would have done quite well in your tournaments today if you had your hands on Walt Lemon Jr. What a wonderful name that is. How about the Portland Trailblazers? Let's check in with that situation with, of course, Yusuf Nurkic's injury. Enes Kanter, of course, has been starting in his absence and had a bit of a slow start to his stint there as a starting centre. But over the last three games, Jarrett's been playing well.
He's been fantastic. He's been putting up, you know, double-digit points. They've actually been 20 points per game and also high rebounding as well. So we know that Enes is really capable of this. And look, even the games where he just shifted into the starting lineup, it wasn't bad. It was 13-6 and 14-8. That's what we sort of expect from Enes when he does come off the bench. But
yeah,
putting up 20 points per game and 15 is what we'd like as a starter, and that's probably perfect right now.
Yeah, and maybe even a little bit above what we could ask for. That's really good numbers, 20 points and 13.7 rebounds per game. So if you happen to have him in a grand final at the moment, he'll be giving you a big boost. And certainly in DFS, he's going to hold value while he's at this probably slightly lowered price.
What happens next year with Enes? Because he's obviously signed till the end of the season with Portland. Is there a chance that he finds himself a starting spot at a different team next season?
I don't think so. I don't know whether he is a good... When we've seen him jump from OKC to New York, and teams don't like to play him as a starting centre, do they? They clearly think he has deficiencies, probably on the defensive end from what we've seen.
Yeah, and it's it happens with a lot of players as well because of their defensive deficiencies. They don't start, but you feel like when Enes does get big minutes, he puts up fantastic offensive production, but NBA teams don't seem to care about that.
Yeah, and just adding on the DFS point with Enes Kanter, I think he also will be a bit of a chalk play. I think a lot of owners will be jumping on him. Obviously, the Yusuf Nurkic injury is really well known. People will know that Kanter's the starting five, putting up big numbers. He's a pretty obvious play. So I think a good way to differentiate yourself from other owners in DFS would probably be to not play Enes Kanter. And one guy I would be definitely looking at is Mitchell Robinson over the last few games, because he is cheap and he's going to put up big numbers. How about your man, Jared? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the Canadian for the LA Clippers, been really good, especially growing his offensive game over the last 4 to 5 weeks. I mean, since the beginning of March, Jared, 15.6 points per game and shooting the three ball at a ridiculous 59%.
It's not bad, is it? And look, he doesn't take too many three-point attempts, so it's no surprise that his percentage is so high, but it's really handy because when he's getting that three ball going, it stretches the floor a little bit more. I think this guy's going to be such a good player in future years. If he gets his defensive production up, we're looking at a guy that, you know, if he can get around that five rebounds and almost probably over five assists as well. I know he's not the best playmaker right now. He's still improving that game, but he's so good defensively. So adding a few steals in, he could be such a multifaceted player for fantasy.
What do you expect to see from him next year in fantasy?
It's really hard to predict, I'd say. I want to see what happens in free agency first. I think he'll still start as the starting point guard for this roster, unless we somehow got Kemba or whatever it is. But I think definitely there'll be an improvement in his scoring.
Yeah, I think potentially this is a guy that at least in 3 to 4 years could definitely average 18, 5, and 5, some really strong numbers. And, you know, look, sky's the limit, but that certainly seems within reach for me.
I think Shea as a player is probably never going to be an elite point guard, but I think what I expect him to be is a really solid guy that plays really good defense and that can defend almost 4 or 5 positions on the court because he's so big and long.
That's a perfect sort of player for the Clippers at the moment, certainly with what you've built anyway over the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's bully ball at the Clippers, Liam.
Bully ball.
We get it's grit and grind, we get the job done.
Grit and grind. I didn't realise it was referred to as bully ball.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. We've got Montrezl, he loves a bit of bully ball under the ring.
We can't be bullying people nowadays, Jared, even if it is on the basketball court. Not acceptable in my book. All right, we've got another special guest here on today's episode of the GM's Office, Josh Barrett, the currently number 5 ranked player in Daily Fantasy in the whole of Australia. So really good on that platform, and we had the chance to speak to him and ask him about how he does things. Check it out. Thanks for joining us, Josh. Well, about 2:30 p.m. here Australian time. Do you have any NBA lineups going at the moment?
Yeah, I've got some lineups in play, none up near the top. I've got a few of the Chicago Bulls cheapies that have let me down today, so no big ones to watch at the moment. Might sneak a cash, but no big money today.
So how much time do you spend each day working on your lineups?
At the start of the season, it was about an hour every day. Now as we're coming to the end of the season, it's a bit crazy at the moment with all the restings going on. I'm usually just spending 15 minutes and trusting my gut and hopefully hit a winning lineup.
So how many lineups are you entering each day? Are you mass entering, or is it sort of 4 or 5?
When the big prize pools are up, I'm usually doing 4 to 6, but currently I'm playing about 2 a day, 2 to 3 a day.
What are your thoughts on mass entering? I mean, it's been a pretty big issue now in the DFS community for a few years.
I've sort of got mixed opinions on it. As I started off, I used to hate it when there was guys entering 20, 30 lineups. It just made it feel impossible. But as I've grown a bit of a bankroll now to be able to do it, I've sort of found like the new challenges that come with it. Like, it's not as easy as I thought it'd be with 20 teams because there's a lot to go on, and I just find I mess myself up when I have multiple teams. So I sort of respect it a bit more than I did when I started.
So how have you found the Australian landscape for DFS? In the US, there's so many sharks that dominate the prize pool. Is it similar here?
I've never really looked into the head-to-head sort of stuff. Like, I noticed when I joined DraftKings, straight away you have 4 or 5 sharks challenging you to try and take your money, obviously. I've never sort of looked into that in the Australian scene. I'm not sure if it's quite the same, but there is the big fish, the same few people winning every single day. But I think everyone, even the new guys, have an opportunity to win.
Do you use any sort of data analysis or spreadsheets or anything like that?
I have notes on players that I want to play and players that I try to avoid, but sometimes I can't help myself. I just have sort of general rules that I try to follow.
So what are some of the things that you're looking for when you pick your players? Is it recent form, increased opportunity?
I look into recent form. One thing I look into that I don't think a whole lot of people follow is when a popular player has a bad game, everyone jumps off him. That's when I sort of try to jump on, just as everyone's getting off, because you see it so often, a popular player fails on the day that they're well-owned, and then the next game they score big and everyone wonders, oh, why didn't I pick them then? It just works out funny like that. That's one thing I do. I also look for minutes is massive in NBA. If a player's scoring decent with limited minutes and they get the opportunity for more, then they're straight into my teams.
And how important do you think it is to pick guys who will have low ownership percentages?
I think it's really important. You look at the winner basically every single day and they have a player under 5% owned. that when you think about it, it really makes a lot of sense, but you'd never really thought about it. So it is challenging, but trying to pick that player out before it happens, it can win you the tournament, really. So I do try and look pretty hard into that.
When you pick your players, is there any teams that you like to pick your players to line up against?
Yeah, I love playing Atlanta for and against Trae Young and Collins. Who else is there? I love playing teams against Chicago. I don't play anyone against Memphis, really, or San Antonio at home, just because they just seem to turn players into garbage for the day, no matter who it is. There's a few teams like that that I target, and a few that I just, no matter how good the player, I just avoid them.
So when you won the Target 400, what was that like? Can you sort of explain the buzz of it all?
It was great to win, but the stress that came with it was massive. I realised about 1 o'clock that day that I might be half a chance of the OT. And I was just literally every single play, I was sweating it, just hoping they'd pass it to my players. And then I got within 5 points. It was Corey Brewer and Rondo to go. And you just think the worst. Like, oh, these are two old guys. Like, they could go down at any time.
So are you sweating through these games when they're happening, or are you trying to take your mind off it?
If I look like winning big, I have both games going. I get two phones out and get on the Tab app and watch them both live, but which is what I was doing when I won the Target. I basically wasn't even watching the game either. I was just literally had eyes on Rondo and Corey Brewer.
What do you think is the most profitable form of DFS? Is it, you know, 50-50s, GPPs?
I reckon GPPs, 50-50s, you have to be around to know who you're playing up against. I don't know if you guys follow the NRL DFS, but there's a guy called Nova. He does really well. I rate him as the best in Australia at the moment. And I don't play head-to-head just because I don't think I can beat him. He's just that good. I think I'd just be donating money to certain people. So I stay away from head-to-head because you don't really know the skill level of your opponent.
What's your hit rate like with those GPP tournaments?
Yeah, at the start of the year, I was cashing basically every day, but there was no big wins. And then I sort of changed it up a bit and I went through a real dry patch, no wins. I was just playing too many risky plays. And then I had a couple top five finishes through that same method. So it probably worked out the same in returns, but it was just more up and down, more of a roller coaster.
So what are your goals going forward for DFS? Is there anything in particular?
I really want to get into DraftKings next year. I want to win one of the big prize pools there. It's a massive goal and pretty unlikely with the amount of entries they get. But I'd love for myself or even another Australian to take out one of their big competitions.
And is there any advice you could give to someone just starting out in DFS?
You really got to do your research. It can be a bit dangerous if you just jump in. And like I did, I jumped straight in and all I knew was Kobe Bryant and players like that, and they'd be the players I'd pick, and I just wouldn't do any good. So you really got to do your research into the players that score well in the format and not just the big names. That'd be my number one advice.
Well, it was great to have Josh on the show. We spoke to him last week over the phone, and look, some really good stuff we learnt there, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of surprising little things that I thought really interesting that I'm going to take away in my own DFS games.
I liked his point about picking popular players, you know, after a bad game. It can turn a lot of people off. I think that's a really valuable bit of knowledge there from Josh.
Yeah, and it goes to players with low percentage owned, because there would be some stars in the market that will have a low percentage just because of their bad games they've had previously.
Yeah, so don't follow the sheep seems to be the, you know, word of advice from Josh, and lots of research required for Daily Fantasy. I mean, and there's a lot of the top players, they're pretty dominant, so you have to be very well prepared to even stand a chance, I think, to win. I mean, he is now the number 5 ranked player in Australia, according to Daily Fantasy rankings, so a pretty extraordinary achievement, isn't it, from Josh?
Yeah, it's fantastic, especially from a guy that he said in the interview that he didn't have much NBA knowledge before he started DFS. So the fact that he you know, gathered all this knowledge so quickly to become a really good DFS player is fantastic.
Mm, and he has written an article on Daily Fantasy Rankings, how to rise up the rankings. So that's a really good read. I think if anyone's interested in Josh's career and how to improve their DFS game, I'd highly recommend reading that.
Definitely. For a guy that's won over $65,000 in earnings through DFS, it's just unbelievable. So you can find Josh at jbarrett_16. He's pretty active on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. He's very active in the DFS community. A very good follow if you're interested in that space. So thanks, Josh, for the interview. Now, this is our last show of the GM's office for the regular season, isn't it, this season? So been fun, hasn't it, launching the show?
It has been. It's been a new way for us to talk about Fantasyland. We've always been really big fantasy people, and it's really good that we can get a show out, help other people. We've got a fair bit of experience now in at least our fantasy league. So hopefully we're helping you guys at the moment.
Yeah, I'm really pumped for next season. I mean, we're ready to go now. It's all up and running. So we'll be back in the off season, of course, covering the draft and all the moves in free agency and the like, and then also looking forward to our draft boards to next season.
Yeah, and next year we're also interested in starting a 30-team dynasty league. We're still deciding whether we want that to be a points league or a categories league, so we'll decide that eventually. But we'd love for you guys to get involved, so send us a message on any of our social media platforms, and we'll look to get that going really soon.
I reckon it'd be awesome, wouldn't it? I mean, it'd be just like, in some ways, the real NBA, 30 teams, you know, everyone keeps, there'd be teams tanking, and you know, it'd be awesome. And if we could get some listeners involved, it could be a really good community.
Exactly. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, as always, we are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the GM's office. Thanks very much for listening this season, guys. And if your fantasy team is still going and there might be a couple of days left in your grand final, good luck. Hope you get the one up on your friends.